TypeRadio.org, broadcasting from San Francisco, TypeCon 2004.
Hi, my name is Mike Parker, and you are listening to Type Radio. Now we are talking, and I've been asked to comment on the origins of Times Roman. Not many people are aware that the Roman itself was designed by an American polymath in Boston in 1903. Starling Burgess is known principally for his last three great J-boats that defended America's Cup in the 1930s. In 1915, he had won the Collier Trophy for the most advanced aircraft of the year, a flying wing. Early in the 20th century, he took his poetry and discussed it with Swinburne, who praised it highly. There's almost nothing he didn't do well, including five marriages, each to a woman more beautiful than the last. In 1903, he was at Harvard and quit to start his own yacht design company, producing the following year a single design that changed American yacht racing rules forever, but that's not our story. At that time, he was working with the Heinzelmann Press on a project I have not been able to trace, but it involved designing a new typeface. The Roman alone was completed. The italics and bold were held on perfection of the monotype machine, Heinzelmann Press being the leading user of the new monotype technology. The italic and bold were set aside for equipment improvements, but the Roman was completed, and the monotype drawings for the 12-point are in the Smithsonian, and they're clearly by a different hand from anything else at monotype. Unfortunately, Karl Heinzelmann died in 1908. The press collapsed, and Starling Burgess got interested in the design of aircraft. He was never able to pay for the drawings, which then found their way back to Lansden. In 1919, after the First World War, British Monotype had had a small factory at Salford's to make matrices. It had grown into a huge factory making armaments, I believe, for Vickers Armstrong. The Brits had for a long time been pressing the Americans at Lanston to build Land Rovers instead of Jeeps, but had gotten nowhere. So in 1919, having funded the American factory in 1897, the British found that they'd funded really two factories with this huge armaments factory that no longer was good for anything. So they decided to make their own lines of equipment. And they hired a young conscientious objector called Stanley Morrison to head the typographic effort. Frank Hinman Pierpont, an American, ran the factory and particularly enjoyed typography, and there was a bit of a scrap at the beginning. And in the end, Pierpont was assigned anything that was enlarging old series, and truly new series became the work of Stanley Morrison. The two men never got along. To cut a long story short, in 1930, Morrison worked on a couple of new faces for the London Times, and the Times was unhappy with them. Pierpont, being permitted to make enlargements of old series, collected orphans from throughout the company and apparently had proofs or patterns from the old number 54, and I don't believe anyone remembered where it came from. With Morrison in trouble at the Times, Pierpont produced this design, which Morrison presented, and the Times loved it. Morrison, if you've ever read my introduction to his book, The Tally of Types, never wanted to give Pierpont public credit. So he got Victor Lardent to make a series of new drawings, which I believe to have been retouched pattern proofs of the old number 54. And he changed a few characters to make it look as if it derived from Plantin. Sent it to the factory, where Pierpont went back, by and large, to the originals. And the British company will tell you today that the number of recuttings of characters was a mark of their search for perfection in this typeface. In fact, it was the struggle between the two men, and in the end, except for the lowercase g, which is clearly a Grandjean lowercase g, Pierpont had his way, and it is very much the work of Starling Burgess. Morrison maintained that the typeface was designed from Plantin, basically a Grandjean design, accessed through a pretty badly over-inked set of proofs. And if you look at the two, clearly the origin is not Plantin. The concealment of the origin is partly due to the spat between Morrison and Pierpont. And also to the difficulties between Lanston Monotype of Philadelphia and the Monotype Corporation of London. Finally, the concealment was agreed to in 1960 when the hatchet was buried and peace declared, and a bond of confidentiality was signed between the principals, the Monotype Corporation, Lanston Monotype. Linotype and Machinery, the linotype company in England who made the linotype matrices that the Times had to have in 1931. And, of course, the London Times itself. And in the bond of confidentiality, the four parties agreed that this was to be kept a secret for all time. But such secrets have a habit of leaking. Walter Tracy of Linotype and Machinery once asked me over breakfast if I didn't think that Times Roman had a curiously American look, particularly the styles at the beginning of the 19th century. And having excited my curiosity, of course, refused to go further. He was bound not to. And this information came to me cautiously through the hands of Gerald Giampa, who back in the early 90s had the courage to buy the remnants of Lanston Monotype, amongst which he found some very old patterns, sent me the proofs and said, are these familiar? I called him back and said, of course, they're Times Roman. He said, no, they're not. They're two-piece pattern letters, which were never manufactured after 1915, and the files indicate that they are the work of Starling Burgess, work undertaken in 1903. Gerald these days lives in Victoria, British Columbia, and someday we hope to make a joint presentation and bring forward all of the facts with a degree of proof to lay the origin of this typeface bare once and for all. Thank you very much.
Type Radio FM.
Now we're talking.
Even more so. No, I have to say was.
Yeah, it was.
His dad, he was an American pilot, wasn't he? Volunteered to the Brits to fly Spitfires early in the First World War. Second World War. Second World War. And flew combat for 4 years and survived.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. From North Africa up into Russia. He was made second.
Malta, I believe.
Yeah. And that was a very dangerous profession.
None of those guys lived more than 3 months.
Yeah. Flying bomber escorts. My dad did it for 4 years.
During the Second World War, 4 years.
Yeah. As a fighter pilot. Okay.
And his dad...
Daily and lived. Okay, this is 4 years before I was born.
Yeah.
He quit.
Okay. And his dad had even sharper, squarer corners than this guy does.
Yeah, my father had a survival instinct.
A survival instinct, and he would never shade anything. You know, I think political would be the ultimate dirty word to this pair. And
We're direct. We are definitely, as you said, outstanding, not neutral.
You have my unshaded admiration, sir.
Thank you. It comes.
Even if we did have some difficulties with the contract, but I think we always worked it out.
No, we have to restart. We press recording again.
It's recording.
Oh, yeah. You're kidding. Were you recording that?
We know our secrets.